Hi, my name is Ian Parry, and welcome to What the Future, the podcast produced by Future Leaders Mentoring. Today, we're chatting with Luke Murphy in one of our special podcast series on leaders' life stories. Hi, Luke. Good morning.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Looking forward to this. So, for those that don't know, we spent a bit of time together at First Utility before it became Shell. And if I'm right in remembering, you were kind of part of the billing function then. Have I remembered right?
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So I don't want to give away any secrets, but we do kind of know each other. I guess when you left Shell last year, I think we kind of had a bit of a chat, and now you're off doing your own thing, which is exciting. I'm really looking forward to sort of getting into that. And one of the reasons why I was really keen on getting you on today, anybody that follows you on LinkedIn can see that you've got a real clear message you want to get out there. You're sharing lots of stuff on LinkedIn. Visually, it's really appealing because you've really sort of caught up in that. And there's a really strong message there. And I wanted to get you on the podcast because I think that's the sort of message that our listeners will get something from. So I'm looking forward to today. So let's get into the questions then before I give away too much of your secret sauce. So Luke, tell us who you are and what your role is today, please.
Cool. Thanks, Ian. So, my name is Luke Murphy. I'm, I guess, founder of L Empowered Consulting. I'm an independent product and transformation coach with 14 years of experience in change, transformation, and product management. And that includes also being involved in a international award-winning transformation team, where we helped Shell Energy transition their organization towards a more customer-driven operating model. Since then, that's been my goal is to try and recreate that magic elsewhere. And my current mission is to empower trailblazers to disrupt the status quo and drive transformative change from within their organization.
Wow.
And when I'm not doing that,
Yeah.
I'm a married father of two daughters, Darcy and Aria, who are 4 and 2, and they take up a lot of my time and energy. I try to squeeze in time for football too,
Yeah.
trying to play again at the moment, but also going to watch Coventry City, where I'm a season ticket holder. So looking forward to this weekend being at Wembley. And I love craft beer, love reading, and I've got a love-hate relationship with the gym at the moment.
Right, okay. Yes, it's the semi-finals this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, okay. Are you going down?
Yes, yeah, going, looking forward to it. It's going to be a good day out. I'm not expecting a result, but it's always a good day out. So yeah, we'll see.
Nice. Okay. So just want to take you back to how you started. You talked about products and transformation. And what's your In your mind, like, how would you define a product? Because it can be kind of a loose definition, or it can be quite a clear definition. Where do you sit on products and what they are?
I kind of see products as great customer experiences. So it doesn't have to be tied down to a specific problem. It's how you solve customer problems.
Right.
You can do that in ways you leverage technology to be able to do that. And it has to meet the needs of the business. But ultimately, it's about solving customer problems. I kind of think of products as something that's usable, useful, and used. And I try to always think about that as a mindset.
Okay, well, that's a good way of looking at it. Thank you. So let's take you back now then. I always enjoy this question. I hope people kind of look at it. But what's your first memory when you sort of cast your mind back of you growing up? What does that sound like? What does it look like? What is it? How do you remember it?
I've tried racking my brains with this one, and the first thing I can remember, it's a bit of a silly one,
Yeah.
but basically I was probably about 3 or 4, and it was our first holiday abroad. We were at the airport, and my friend and I both were there with our teddies, who were both coincidentally called Blue Teddy, original name I know.
Yeah.
But my memory is of putting our teddies on the conveyor belt, that where the luggage goes, and then watching our blue teddies
Oh.
disappear into the distance. It must be a traumatic experience, as it's vividly remembered, but I had that teddy for years, so it wasn't lost. It must have come back, but for some reason, that's my first memory growing up. So I know it's a bit of a
Well,
silly one, but yeah.
now as a parent today, you'll really have that in your mind when you think about, like, it's a bit of a risk letting a teddy go off like that, isn't it? A child's kind of like sacred toy. That's your parents were risk takers, obviously.
Obviously they were, yes, yeah. And even today now, when I take my kids to school, they always want to bring one of their teddies with them, and it's like, don't forget that, don't lose it, make sure you keep it. So maybe it's been ingrained in me.
It always I mean, it should be an obvious thing, I guess, those early memories and how they kind of properly kind of create a footprint in your life from that point on. Of looking after things and making sure you're now doing that with your daughters. It's a pretty
Yes.
lesson learned, isn't it? So let's fast forward a little bit now then, and talk to us about, how you would describe your journey to your current role.
I kind of always describe it as a very squiggly journey. A lot of trial and error trying to figure things out. For as long as I can remember. And when people ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? The answer was always to work at Disney or Pixar. As an animator, I kind of imagined myself moving to Florida or California and spending my days drawing cartoons. But when I did GCSE art, I discovered that I wasn't the best artist in the class, and that kind of killed my dream. And I don't know why, but then I chose to go to uni and do virtual engineering. I thought I'd go down a route as an engineer, but I never really embraced uni life. I went to Coventry Uni, lived in Coventry with my mom, worked in Coventry, went out in Coventry with all my mates. And actually, when a lot of my uni mates went to placements and did a bit of a got a bit of experience at an engineering company, I went to Malia for the summer, partying, spending a bit of time in a pool bar. So when I left uni, because I hadn't developed that passion for engineering, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And at the time, I was working at Sports Direct, and I had that, as much as I loved the people that I worked with there, it wasn't the best of jobs. I was serving shoes for people, and I had a fear that that's where I was going to end up for the next few years. So I was looking to find that first adult role, if you like, in my career. I did do a 6 week stint at Next, helping edit images for their website, so taking the brochure images and editing it for the website, and that opened my eyes to being open to temporary roles and being able to maybe get experience in an office job but on a temporary basis. And that's what led me to First Utility, where we met. So at the time, and it was about December 2010, at the time my wife, who then was my girlfriend at the time, had been there for a couple of months, and she'd overheard someone saying, we could really do with someone that's got some Excel skills. And so she said, well, my boyfriend can do that. And I guess the rest is history from there.
And then kind of your obviously you see you arrive at First Utility as a inverted commas spreadsheet expert, and kind of you leave as like a product leader. What's kind of going on between, yes, I can do some macros in a spreadsheet, to working, with the SNS guys in this transformation project, award winning? How do you go from one thing to the next? It sounds like it's continuing a bit squiggly lined again, but how do you do that?
So actually, I was only supposed to be there for 3 months. It was supposed to be something on my CV. But within the first 5 weeks, I'd automated a lot of the role. So it was an admin role, but using those Excel skills, I was able to automate the role. So I was offered a permanent position, and I was there 12 years in the end. I kind of always say that I joined at the right time. First Utility was on that cusp of scaling. It was a startup. I think I was number 80 employee, and it was ready to start scaling. And so I kind of describe it as I rode the wave from that point onwards. As the company grew, it meant that there was more opportunities created that I could then embrace. And I actually loved trying new things out, trying out a new role, helping create new teams, new processes. And that drove a lot of my early career decisions, I think. because the role kind of evolved from being an admin role, then a data analyst, and then there was a new team created where I was a process analyst. And at the time, we were transitioning to a new billing system. So lots of new processes being created. But that also gave me an opportunity to work closely with a lot of the technology teams. And that's where I got my first taste of agile development and agile ways of working, kind of as a product owner. And I thought that's where my career was going. I then made a move to become a business analyst within the software teams. And as much as I really enjoyed the role, it was I got to work on some really interesting industry-wide things. I grew quite frustrated as well because the company was changing and evolving quite a lot. The focus was constantly shifting. But as a business analyst, you get moved on to a new project, you dive into that problem space, you try to learn as much as you can about it to identify what the problems are to be solved, what the requirements are for the delivery teams. To then get moved on to something else was what was frustrating for me. I never saw anything through to completion. And that
Yes.
felt like a gap for me in my career. I wanted to own something, I wanted to have that decision-making power, and I wanted to see things through.
Yeah.
So I actually then made a move back to operations. So from software back into operations into billing basically. So we'd created a new billing services team. At the time it was looking at aged and billed, which is basically where customers haven't had a bill for a couple of months or even up to a year. And I had a great opportunity to create that team. I did that alongside my BA role for a bit. But what I was able to do was bring then that agile ways of working and everything that I learned in the software space and bring it to an operational team, which was felt quite innovative at the time, but it's proved to be successful because we reduced the agent bill by about 84% during that time, with the ways of working that we were doing back then. So it's a real great learning opportunity for me. But one of the other things I learned in that time was my style as a leader.
Okay.
It was my first managerial position, first time I was in a leadership role, and I took a very one size fits all sort of approach to leadership,
Yeah.
which meant that underperforming individuals didn't get managed effectively. My style was more of a team coaching style, and try and get everyone up to the same level, even though there might be some people who needed support. So that was a real learning opportunity for me. And I got to take that learning into my next role, where I became so I became billing improvements manager at the time. We were transforming the billing processes, and I had a team of one. It was me and another. So that meant they got a personalized one-to-one management style from me. I
Yeah.
learned a lot more about them as an individual, and then my approach as a manager to that individual. So then as the team grew and more people got added to the team, each one got a more personalized approach. So always these great learnings along that squiggly career journey.
Yeah.
One of the other things I realized at that time was that I love facilitating workshops,
Okay.
love guiding people to a shared goal. And I also love learning about new things. So that role expanded from just not just billing, but also then prepay, onboarding again, credit management and payments. And I think that's what led me to my next kind of pivotal moment in my career was that I was good at adapting to different problem spaces.
Yeah.
So I think that the next role was kind of almost a big move outside of my comfort zone. At the time, I was asked to lead the Bill Media and Communications team, which was a very operational team with a lot of demand from stakeholders, but they had a technical skill set. So it was a bit of a leap out of my comfort zone there. But they were going through their own transformation. They were transitioning to new systems. They were recruiting roles in both in the UK and in Poland, so trying to figure out that team dynamics. But also, we were going through a rebrand. We'd just been acquired by Shell, so we were going to rebrand from First Utility to Shell Energy, and that team were going to be quite heavily involved in that. So I knew my role. My role was to protect that team, help keep the focus, but also evolve the ways of working. So to my surprise, I said yes to the role before trying to figure out how I was going to do it. And it was only a short stint. It was only about 6 months in that role, but it was a real proud moment for me when we then eventually did the rebrand, and that led me to my next crossroads, I guess, in my career.
Okay.
Because that.
Okay. Just want to ask a question. You said that about protecting your team. And that's a real leadership quality, but kind of what brought you to that kind of point of saying, right, okay, I need to protect the team here. Was it you'd seen others doing that and that was something you really admired, or was it just something you knew in yourself that you just had to do? How did you kind of come to that?
Part of it was I didn't know the detail. So I couldn't do the role that my teammates were doing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to figure out, well, what's my role to play? And there was a lot of pressure coming from all different angles, from top down, but also from all the different sides, from the different stakeholders. And so I figured, well, I could handle that side of things and the team can then focus on the detail and doing the do, because I'm not going to be able to do it. Yeah. So I felt like that was my role then, is I'll go to all the different meetings, I'll provide the updates, I'll keep everyone in the loop. You just keep doing what you do best.
Cool. Okay, so you guys concentrate on this. I'm going to give you space to do that. And I'm gonna sort of take the heat and the flak, and I'm gonna then make sure that we're connected to this. Yes, good call. That I'm sure they were grateful for that.
Yeah, I know that they were. But it was it was a great time. We did really well as a team. It felt like when we took it on that it was an impossible task, but it was such a relief when that weekend all the comms went out to customers. It was all rebranded. Different colors and different names and logos and stuff.
Great. And people think that's such a simple thing, don't they? But yeah, we know it's different, very complicated. So well done on that. And then does that then take you into the sort of the product role and working with the likes of Sullivan and Stanley and those folks?
Yeah. So as I said, I was kind of at a crossroads. At the time, I'd figured out the right homes for different parts of that build media and communications team. So we started to transition people into different roles, into different areas of the company, which obviously then left the question mark about my own role. So I spent a bit of time kind of brainstorming what's my strengths and weaknesses, what are my likes and dislikes. And I remember having a conversation, I remember it vividly now, with my mentor at the time, talking it through with him and him saying, holy crap, product. And I remember thinking, okay, I need to learn a bit more about product. I'd heard about it, but I need to learn a bit more. And it definitely felt like that sweet spot for me. It ticked all the boxes in terms of what I was looking for, but also what I wasn't looking for. And the reason it was such a holy crap sort of moment for him was that he was part of the transformation leadership team. They were creating a new product role as part of a new way of working. And so it was an opportunity to move into that position, which I kind of described it at the time as I was the guinea pig. I now call it an accidental trailblazer. But I really leaned into that. And that became my purpose for quite a while, where I felt my role was to pave the way for others and find that better way of working. I'll go through all the pain and challenges so that others don't have to. And I absolutely love that. I fell in love with product. I fell in love with that role as a trailblazer. I found some real success as we started to challenge the status quo, change some things, do a lot of experimentation. And even though we saw lots of successes, there were a lot of challenges along the way. And I had great support from the leadership around me, but I felt quite almost lonely in that role. And that's where I've led to my next point in my career, where I'm thinking about how I could then make it less lonely for those trailblazers in the future. But actually, that's where we then met Sullivan and Stanley, which you mentioned. So they became they're a consultancy that became our change partners in this transformation. And I'll admit, I was skeptical at first. I've worked with big consultancies in the past and had a not so great experience. But when I had my first interaction with S&S, they felt different. I felt like our values were aligned. But what I also loved with it was that they were willing to embrace an emergent way of working, meaning that we could co-create it together. And I was just sold from that point onwards. I put my hand up for any opportunity to work closely with S&S at the time. And I was lucky enough to be able to get a role in the transformation scaling team at the time. So I could then help support with that and learn from the S&S team. And we saw some real success. And that's where we won Transformation of the Year at the International Customer Experience Awards.
Wow. So all of that stuff coming together and being able to call yourself successful based on, you know, all the stuff you've delivered, but then the external industry recognition as well. That must have been a really proud moment for you and the team.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was an interesting one because all of this was done during lockdown. So we hadn't seen each other face to face. And when we won that award, it was just as lockdown restrictions were starting to be lifted. So we were all down in London meeting each other for face to face for the first time, but also as a way to then celebrate as a team that we'd won this award. And they actually did it as a recording, and it was an international award. So it felt very much like Eurovision, sort of the way we were watching it.
Oh, cool. And just a couple of observations along the way then. So you've moved from all these different roles, and it feels like you never kind of created yourself as I'm the single source of knowledge and expert, and therefore you've been able to move around a little bit easier because you've remained really curious, you've understood kind of what's going on in each places. It sounds like you've utilized the talent and knowledge around you, and this idea of workshops and helping people through problems, it really fascinates me because it's something I really enjoy as well. I know lots of other people do too. But that kind of idea that you don't necessarily need to be an expert to be hugely valuable in a business, and I think your story really does kind of tell us that, because you've moved across multiple different departments in a business there. And as we know, First Utility was a business underpinned by technology, but you've moved through lots of complicated parts of the business without necessarily saying, yes, I'm the single source of the truth here, I'm the expert. I'm not worrying about that. Is that a fair comment, or am I getting it a little bit wrong?
No, I think there's been times where I have been the go-to person for certain things, but I kind of like to call it as a T-shape. So you can either be really super broad and general across everything, or you can go really deep in a specialism, or you can be T-shaped, which means that you're a bit of both. You can think broadly across the business, but then you're also recognizing your area of specialism. And I think that's what I've been quite good at, is being that T-shaped role, or maybe even M shapes, you know, as you get more deeper in certain problem areas. But yeah, I've always been open to try new things. I quite like almost expanding to fill the empty space, if that makes sense. So I might take on a specific role, but then recognize the gaps around that role that need filling. And I like to be the person that will try and fill that gap.
No, that's a good way of looking at it. So just moving on then, and trying to sort of kind of encapsulate everything you've talked about. Is there a life lesson that you've kind of picked up along the way that you kind of, you've got on a t-shirt somewhere or next to your laptop, or are you a believer in that sort of thing?
I've been trying to think about this one, and I guess it's sort of what we've already alluded to here, but I've wrote down here, be open to try new things. So the path isn't a linear one. From my own experience, it can be squiggly as you do that kind of trial and error to find your passion. And I feel like I've found an area that's my passion, and it's quite good because it's an area that I'm good at and the world needs, and people are willing to pay for it. So I feel like I've found that kind of sweet spot. And that's where it becomes quite fun, where you find that passion. One of my other things is that sometimes with passion comes frustration, and I've learned to accept that that's okay. Because as long as people know what you're passionate about, they're willing to forgive you for that, those moments of frustration. And actually, it creates a gravity towards you where people want to support and help you.
No, it's a good point, isn't it? Because I guess there's a line between that kind of passion and kind of almost like egotistical behavior. And I think if you can tread that line correctly and just say, I really care about this, and therefore, I'm not willing to accept poor standards, for instance, but I'm going to hold myself to those same standards, and therefore if I fall below, I can hold my hands up and say, do you know what, guys? Yeah, I messed up there. I'm really sorry.
I remember a conversation with a manager years ago where they said, I don't know what you believe in, I don't know what motivates you. and they were probably right at the time. But then later on, I found a passion in customer experience and customer value, and really wanted to be that champion for customers. And I remember then having feedback that, loads of positive feedback that you're super passionate, but then also a little bit negative feedback of, oh, you show your frustration. But I think I kind of saw it as, if I've got something to be frustrated about, it's because I'm passionate about it. And actually, with that in mind, I actually won that year a customer centricity award, which I think was just showing that my passion around customer experience was then really shining through, so much so that my colleagues recognized me for it.
No, that's a really good point, actually. And you mentioned at the beginning of your journey that some of your fellow students were doing sort of engineering sort of work in the summer, and you were off enjoying yourself. I guess that's a real key thing, isn't it? That, if you were really passionate about something, you were going to put the time and effort into it. And clearly your fellow students felt that way about what they were doing, and you didn't. And equally, even though you were successful moving around First Utility and fixing things, it still took you a moment to find your passion. And I guess that to me is a big lesson to others, is you will find your passion, and it might take you a few moments of different squiggly lines and saying yes to some things, and just kind of remaining focused that it will come.
Yeah, definitely. I have always been a kind of an all or nothing sort of person, and I think it's if I'm brought in and I'm passionate about it, I'll throw everything in. If I'm not, I find myself to start disengaging, and that's maybe the example with my uni experience. But also, I mentioned before that I used to play football. I was never just a footballer that would then turn up and play and then go home again. I would run the line if I was on the bench. I would help with the water bottles. I'd run the blackout afterwards in the pub, that sort of thing. I was not just a bit part player. I wanted to be all in about it.
Great, good example. So thinking about your daily routine, and I'm sure your daily routine has changed quite a lot from your going to the office days or being in a corporate job day. And obviously with your two girls coming along, that would have changed your daily routine as well. But do you fix on a daily routine? Does it help you, or are you pretty flexible in what happens day to day?
I've got an ideal routine that I kind of can stick to for a couple of months at a time and then slip back into to old bad habits. But when I do stick to it, I feel much more energized and productive. So one of the things about me is I used to traditionally be an out night owl. I used to find that I'd get a second wind in the evening. I used to always be one of those people that were late working in the office. When I come home, I might log on again later on. And also I mentioned before I've got a love-hate relationship with the gym. I used to love the gym. That used to be a big part of my identity. I used to go morning and evening 5, 6 times a week. But like you said, since my kids came along, all of that went out the window. I feel like once I get to the evening, my energy is zapped. I don't find the time for things like the gym anymore. So to be able to do that and fit in other things in my life, I've had to try and teach myself to be an early bird. So I'm trying, and like I said, I do it for a couple of months at a time to try and get up at 5 a.m. and start the day early and get a start on it, which means that my daily routine starts the night before. So when the kids go to bed, that's usually the start of my bedtime routine too. I'll get into bed early and read a book. At the moment, I'm reading fantasy and fiction books in the evening to help me unwind, in the hope to then, get a good night's sleep. When I wake up in the morning, before I can talk myself out of it, I try and get myself to the gym, get a good workout in, come home, do my meditation, journaling, read a non-fiction book. Before then, the crazy routine starts with the kids, getting them to school, and then my working day will start. At the moment, I try and split my working day into two halves. The morning is what I call deep work. That's where I do my creative work. You mentioned before about my LinkedIn post. That's when a lot of those get created, is in the morning. And then the afternoon will be more for what I call busy work. That's when I do my admin. I have one-to-ones with people in my network. I join webinars, and things like that. But no 2 days are the same, because now I've left the corporate world and have set up on my own. It means I need to try and manage my own day, which can be a challenge, trying to keep myself accountable, keep myself focused, keep myself motivated each day. But that's kind of the routine that I try and keep on top of. It's difficult because some evenings the routine can go completely out the window. If I have a couple of beers after football or have a late event in London or the kids have a bad night's sleep, it has a real impact on the next day, and then it can spiral out of control, as the week goes on. So each Friday I try to do a bit of a reset and reflect on the week, what's gone well, what's not gone so well, and set goals for the next week.
And it's so easy with a plan that you've outlined there, and with all the different moving parts for the wheels to come off. And I've been doing a lot of learning myself in this whole idea of mindset and commitment and discipline. But some of the more recent reading I've been doing is just about consistency. So, if you just kind of don't worry about the attitude and the motivation and all these things, because they'll ebb and flow. But just teaching yourself that just doing things consistently, but also if you miss a couple of days, give yourself a break and just kind of go, okay, well, that didn't happen because of X, Y, and Z. Don't feel the guilt too harshly. Learn from it, reset, and then go again. Don't allow it to become the new routine, the new behavior, and just kind of go, well, okay, well, that happened. I'll give myself a bit of a talking to if it was something I could have controlled, but I can move on. But I'm certainly learning that consistency is more important to me than all those other things, actually, because you can just rock up every day and be consistent, and that's helping me right now.
Yeah, definitely. I think showing up each day and putting the money in the bank, if you like, putting the time in the bank, I think is definitely key.
So moving into a slightly different question now, and thinking a bit more broadly, and to the future, I guess. So when we consider, and certainly in the industry that we've been part of, the utilities industry, still very much a male dominated industry, and certainly a sort of a middle-aged white man dominated industry. Do you think that bias is going to be removed in time for your daughters to come in to working lives, or do you see it as, bias is something that's just part of us as humans, and therefore we'll never see the end of it?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one because I think that it's great that it feels like people are talking about it a lot more now and that awareness is improving. Whether and I think there's a need for diversity in life in general, but also in the workplace. I think having that inclusive environment where people feel them they could be themselves, they feel like they've got an equal voice, equal opportunities, I think is really key. And I've seen that in teams where you've got that diversity of thought. It's really important when when problem solving. Because you've got all those different perspectives and different angles that people could tackle it from. I do think that bias is subjective, though, and it's unconscious. And so I like to think it's getting better, but whether that's going to be in my generation, I'm not sure. I'd love to definitely see it in my daughter's generation. I'd love to see gender bias, as an example, be removed. But I think we've got a long way to go. But I also recognise I'm probably not the authority on this, as you mentioned white males, so I'm in a position of privilege there.
Yeah, definitely. And that idea you mentioned there of diverse teams, I guess I've looked back over my career and thought, actually, I've probably recruited in an unconsciously biased way in the past, and I've just kind of clicked with somebody immediately and not kind of thought too much about why that was, and ended up sometimes with a team of people that thought like me, and maybe even looked and sounded like me. And I remember there was a moment I was listening to the Rebel Ideas book by Matthew Syed, and the way that he talks about how, those, different teams and the makeup of the teams and the diverse thinking backgrounds, race, religion, and how that will almost always outperform other teams that don't have that. And it was a real moment of like, holy cow, I've been building teams in what I thought was the right way. Maybe there was some bias on my part that was stopping me from getting to that next level with my teams. I was doing what I thought was all the right things, but actually, when you look at the teams, there was a bit of an echo chamber going on, and that was a big moment for me of trying to get past that.
Yeah, definitely. I love that book, by the way. I've read that before, and it's a great, great book. And that's one of the approaches that I've tried to bring when I'm working with different teams, is how do we create blended teams that have got that more than just cross-functional, cross-organizational, bringing all the different diverse perspectives into the teams, to create that kind of shared, equal voice, but from all their different perspectives, but tackling the same sort of goal. And that's where I always see the magic happen. When I've seen teams before that are like those echo chambers, they're not realizing their full potential. Once you bring in those extra viewpoints from different areas, suddenly that it will unlock a lot more. So that's definitely something I'm really keen to see.
Yeah, definitely. So we're at the final question of the podcast, Luke. And I'm interested in this because obviously you're on a different journey now on your next squiggly line, but kind of do you have a view of what next for you in the future, or are you just kind of seeing what comes to you and you'll say yes to some things and no to others?
Yeah, so I left Shell about 12 months ago, where I felt the timing was right for me to take what I call the leap of faith. The timing was right for me. I felt confident in myself, and I wanted to then go recreate the magic elsewhere. And luckily, Sullivan Stanley looked after me. I had a 6 month engagement with one of the largest automotive companies in the UK, which gave me such great learning experience with that. And I also won an Associate of the Year award with them. But that finished in November, so I've had the time now to kind of explore what's next for me. I think in the short term, I'm on the lookout for my next consulting gig, and hopefully get another opportunity to help another organization with their transformation. But alongside that, I've been able to start exploring my own coaching business. And I've mentioned it earlier on in the podcast that I've got a hypothesis really around trailblazers, learning, taking from my own experience there, that I've being in that position as a trailblazer, I felt like I had great support around me, but I also felt lonely at times and would have loved to have a coach to guide me. I want to be that coach for others. So I'm exploring that as an avenue. I'm starting to create more content to see, really testing if there is an engaged audience there and see if the message is landing, if the concept is right. And then alongside that, then exploring, well, how do I now productize that? How do I make that as a coaching proposition that then could help and support others, but also maximizing the value that I can bring, because it could be something then that I can dial up and dial down in and around my consultancy engagements. But really, I'm just enjoying that journey at the moment of just exploring it, seeing what's out there, and continuing to be open to ideas.
Wow. So it's lucky you've got some product experience in now being able to develop your own stuff. But that really does, I mean, again, it's kind of like you're taking your experience and what you went through and identifying a there'll be others like me. And as you say, as much as organizations are really trying to support people and look after their well-being and give them support and coaching, sometimes there's those blind spots where if you've not experienced something, you don't know that it's going on. And I do find that there's a lot in leadership that can lead to loneliness. And that's one of the reasons why what we do at Future Leaders is so important as well in mentoring and helping people, because you need a safe space to have some of those conversations. And I think you've really tapped into something there from a trailblazer point of view, that person that's, whether it's taking a leap of faith or just being the first person to go through something, having somebody like yourself to kind of just be there, whether it's a sounding board or a hand on the shoulder or whatever it might be, that sounds like a great opportunity. But as you say, how do you commercialize and make that into a product? can be a challenge when you think it's a it's a really good thing to do, but how do you then make it into a product? But I'm you've got all of the skills to create that, I think.
I hope so. But yeah, like I said, I'm enjoying the process at the moment and taking that lived and breathed experience and my stories and trying to capture them before I forget them, because I think they'll be useful later on. So yeah, just enjoying that. But yeah, fingers crossed something comes up.
Great. Thanks, Luke. So we're at the end of the podcast. We've got through it. You've shared some great things with us today. The idea of a career path being a squiggly line and finding your passion, staying curious, and the idea of kind of being an honest leader as well. So you recognizing that in some instances you didn't do the right thing by people, and being able to sort of pull back from that, and then taking that learning to the next set of people that you work with, and identifying where your skills were versus the rest of the teams were, and kind of going, well, I've got a role in this, and it's important for me to sort of to be honest with the team about that. So many different golden nuggets that I think will come out of this. Not least original toy names, Blue Teddy. I mean, great. And that definitely will resonate with lots of parents with the names that their children have for Teddy. So thanks so much for joining us today. I really enjoy what you've had to share with us. I know lots of other people will do as well. So thank you very much, Luke.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Enjoyed it.
No worries. So as always, thank you for choosing to listen to What the Future. If you enjoyed this episode, then please hit subscribe and tell others about us. And finally, mentoring is a hugely valuable step on the leadership journey, and we're here to help. If you feel the same way, then please get involved. Tap the Join Us button on our webpage, which is www.futureleadersmentoring.com, and follow us on LinkedIn to jump in on our discussions. But for now, goodbye, and we'll speak again soon.